brought to you by Penguin.
A Civil Contract by Georgette Heyer, read by Dominic Thorburn. Chapter 1. The library at Fontley Priory, like most of the principal apartments in the sprawling building, looked to the southeast, commanding a prospect of informal gardens and a plantation of poplars, which acted as a windbreak and screened from view the monotony of the fen beyond. On an afternoon in March, the sunlight did not penetrate the Gothic windows, and the room seemed dim. The carpet, the hangings, and the tooled leather backs of the books in the carved shelves, as faded as the uniform of the man who sat motionless at the desk, his hands lying clasped on a sheaf of papers, his gaze fixed on a clump of daffodils nodding in the wind that soughed round the angles of the house and passed like a shadow over the unscythed lawn. The uniform showed the buff facings and silver lace of the 52nd Regiment. It was as threadbare as the carpet, but for all its shabbiness, it seemed incongruous, as out of place in this quiet room, as the man who wore it felt himself to be. He should not have done so. The Priory was his birthplace, and he owned it. But his adult years had been spent in very different scenes from the placid fens and wolds of Lincolnshire, and his transition from the grandeur of the Pyrenees had been too sudden, and attended by circumstances of too much horror, to make it seem to him anything other than a bad dream, from which he would presently be awakened by a call to arms, or by a stampeding mule brought down by the guy ropes of his tent, or by the mere bustle of a camp at first light. The letters from England had reached him on the last day of January. He had first read his mother's, written in the agitation of her bereavement, and conveying to him, in a barely legible series of crossed and recrossed lines, the news that his father was dead. He had been more shocked than grieved, never having enjoyed more than a casual acquaintance with the late Viscount. Lord Linton, while bluff and good-natured when confronted with any of his offspring, had not been blessed with domestic virtues. A close friend of the Prince Regent, he had so much preferred the Prince's society to that of his family, that very little of his time had been spent in his home, and none at all in considering what might be the hopes or characteristics of one surviving son and two daughters. He had been killed on the hunting field, in the first burst, taking a double at the fly. Not a surprising end for an intrepid and frequently reckless horseman. What did surprise his son was to discover that, contrary to advice and entreaty, he had been riding a green and headstrong young horse, never before tried in the field. Lord Linton was a bruising rider, but not a fool. His heir, knowing the wild hurly-burly of a first burst with the quorn or the beaver, concluded that he had ridden his young'un for a wager, and passed on a maternal command to sell out instantly and return to England, where his presence was most urgently needed. The new Lord Linton, but it was to be many weeks before he answered readily to any other title than Captain Deverell, could not find in his mother's letter any reason why he should pursue a course so repugnant to himself. The letter from Lord Linton's man of business was less impassioned, but more explicit. He read it twice before his brain was able to grasp its horrifying intelligence, and many times before he laid it before his colonel. No one could have been kinder. To no one else, indeed, could Adam Deverell have borne to have disclosed that letter. Colonel Colborne had read it, his countenance unmoved, and he had offered no unwanted sympathy. "You must go," he had said. "I'll grant you furlough immediately, to expedite the business, but you'll sell out, of course." Then, guessing the thoughts hidden behind Adam's rigid countenance, he had added, "A year ago, there might have been doubts which way your duty should have led you, but there are none now."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?